I made my way to the road to get the paper, greeted by a hard gust of the ever-present wind. I had on Hank's flannel jacket, which was a little long in the sleeves for me, but was comfortable and warm enough to wear in the chill of October, and kept Hank near me in a way. The sky was pink on the horizon, but as the fingers of color reached up, it grew darker, angrier. The taller reaches of light made the sky look blood red where it met the retreating darkness, although there were no obvious clouds. This dry spell was quickly turning into a drought, and I'd hardly noticed. If it kept up, all of Montana was going to blow onto North Dakota's fields. I grabbed up the newspaper and started to head back to the house, but something stopped me. Something I saw didn't make sense. My heart nearly jumped into my throat. Shep looked up at me curiously, wondering what I was going to do next, since it didn't seem obvious even to me. I had left the Studebaker parked up next to the door when I'd returned home the night before. Normally, I would have parked the truck in the garage, but that effort had been the last thing on my mind once I'd made my way inside the house. The front tire was flat, and on second glance, so was the rear one. The truck sat low to the ground like it was hunkering down, trying to avoid the wind and dirt just like Shep and me. What the hell? Shep followed my gaze with his amber eyes, stopping where mine stopped, on the truck. I took off and stalked straight to the front tire. Shep remained on my heels, silent, his ears up, his tail stiff, on alert. I was sure he felt my fear, my concern. I leaned down and examined the tire, and there was no mistaking that the tire had been slashed. A 12-inch gouge was slit from the air valve to the top of the tire in a perfect curve. I touched it, cold black rubber, to finger, like I would touch the wound on a human, wondering if I could fix it somehow. I knew immediately that I couldn't. I spun away from the tire and made my way to the rear axle. Same exact thing, same exact slit. I stood up, numb, my mind swirling, trying to comprehend what had happened, what I was seeing. I surveyed the truck from bumper to bumper, and it didn't take long to realize that the truck was sitting evenly, not tilted, which prompted me to hurry to the other side. Just as I'd feared, both of those tires were flat too, slashed, deflated and destroyed with intention. A wave of panic washed over me. We didn't have four spare tires for the truck. There was only one that I knew of. Thanks to Hank's insistence, I knew how to change a tire. I wasn't going to be stranded between home and town with a flat. But this was something else. I didn't know how to fix this. Someone had been here. Might still be here. Someone doesn't want me to leave. I looked around quickly and saw nothing out of place. There was no sign of anyone or evidence that anyone had been at the house. Then I looked down to Shep. How'd you let this happen? The dog just looked at me, unable to answer, unable to understand my question. But I was sure he could smell my fear. I knew I could. Come on, Shep. I hurried toward the house, urged on by my discomfort of standing out in the wide open alone. All alone, I thought. I'm stranded, trapped. Once safely inside, I made a beeline for the kitchen. I grabbed up the .22 from behind the kitchen door and headed to the phone. I didn't hesitate to pick up the receiver. Wasn't the least bit concerned that Berlene Standish might be listening in on the party line. The only person I knew to call was Jaeger. He was close by, would know how to fix the tires, or would be able to help get new ones on, and he would come running once I told him what was going on. I wouldn't be alone then. No, but I couldn't call Jaeger. There was no dial tone. The phone was dead. I made my way outside, staying as close to the house as I could, and found the telephone line had been slashed, just like the tires. It had been cut as cleanly as a shaft of wheat at the stalk for harvesting. The sight of the line in two parts numbed me even more than I already was. I was completely cut off from the outer world. You get used to being stranded when you live on a farm on the edge of western North Dakota. Losing power or the use of the phone happened from time to time, especially in winter. Days could pass before the lights came back, which was one of the reasons that Hank and I still relied on the two Franklin stoves to keep us warm in the winter, instead of a modern furnace of some kind that required a spark of electricity to light it. But most of the time, you were used to the power being there when you turned on a light switch or picked up the telephone. Modern technology brainwashed you into believing that you couldn't live without it. At least it was morning. The darkness of night would have only added to the confinement, fear, and loss that I felt as I stared at that cut line.